We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
And now, ready to mail it in, Todd Lebo.
Right you are, Kay. Happy Friday, baby.
That might be the rightest right you are, Kay, of all time.
Oh, just get me to six.
Hey, man, here's the deal. Been having some fun this week. I love coming in here with you guys and doing the show when Seren's out of town. I love it. But we've had a lot of stuff going on this week, man, and I've been doing a lot of things. I'm going to say this right out of the chute. I was over at Kansas City Cards and Collectibles giving away several things today. We gave away, I think we ended up doing 15 pair of tickets, 10 pair of tickets to the 100-year celebration right at 8 when the doors open. We had a line of people out there, great listeners who had been listening. They were there, and then we gave away tickets throughout while people registered. Steve at KC Cards and Collectibles sweetened the pot. A Bobby Witt Jr. signed baseball.
Really?
Got given away, and a Legarius Sneed signed mini helmet. So that was very cool. And we had Cinnabons. So now I wouldn't eat that. You know, I'm a health freak, as you saw me eat my McDonald's Happy Meal that Ethan got for me before the show. But my day started early out there, but it was awesome. It's a really neat shop. I'm going to tell you this. If you're a baseball card, football card collectible person, and you haven't been to Kansas City Cards and Collectibles in Lee's Summit, go check it out. If you came by this morning, that's great. But, you know, he's only been open for about a year, and awareness is part of the reason you do these things, so people know you're there.
Oh, well, stop by and see it.
Absolutely. It's really nice what they've done inside this store. And that strip mall in Lee's Summit, it's 818 Blue Parkway, which is basically behind Johnny Ray's and Jumpin' Catfish over there. They're doing some nice stuff to the outside of the strip mall, making it updated and new. His store is unbelievable inside. Got, like, nice stone walls and the nice new flooring. And he's got all kinds of great football cards and baseball cards and autographed items and things, too. And I want to mention his website. If you're one of these people, and I don't understand how this all works because I don't know all this card things, but kccardshop.com, that's his website. And they do these things where it's a box opening. You can buy part of a box. These things, I mean, you could, you know, there's very valuable cards in there. And they open them up online. And so just go check out kccardshop.com. If you know, you know. I don't understand this part of these things now. Unfortunately, all my baseball cards when I was a kid aren't worth very much. I thought I was going to be retired by now because of my Kirby Puckett rookie. It didn't happen. But Steve's a great guy, and the card business has gone gangbusters. Even during the pandemic, he said there was a big uptick as people got back into it. You know, what are these boxes in my garage? Let's do this, and let's get into them and everything. So, and obviously, the football season's coming, and it's ready to go. But they were super nice out there. Had a great time this morning. Made a lot of people happy by giving them tickets to our big event coming up next Thursday.
At the Summit Fair shopping mall?
Yeah, right there.
Yep.
So, Casey, Kansas City Cards and Collectibles. It's a really cool place inside there. It's neat. And kccardshop.com. Very nice. Steve opened the doors early for us, because we wanted to do this, and it was kind of scheduling things. Wanted to do it during the Border Patrol, and I had to, you know, be back here to do this. So it worked out really well this morning. I got to get up and shoot over to somewhere that was close to my house. But I hadn't been in the store yet. It's awesome. So awareness is out there. Some kids came in. School's not going yet, right? This right. Dad came in with his kids, and they were back there. You know, you can go in there and just buy cards for fun that aren't the most valuable things in the world. He's got those for you, too. So they had a good time. And I think we got rid of all but one cinnamon roll. It's pretty good.
Everyone loves Cinnabon. This is not a knock on them at all. It is the heaviest looking food.
Oh, it's
I've ever seen. I've never seen anything that looked heavier by volume
than tall, a Cinnabon. And they're big.
Yes, and as you can tell, like there's just a lot of
we were cleaning up the table, and there was still a box that had a few left on it, and our table actually collapsed on the end because I think it was. Because someone didn't latch the thing. Anyway, it might have been the Cinnabons just collapsing it. I don't know. Could have been.
There are certain people who look at me would know that I enjoy food. Mm. But in the morning, I have to eat something, but if I eat too much, I'll get all groggy. So I just have like a boiled egg. That's all I really eat in the morning. There are certain foods, like a Cinnabon, The only way I could eat one in the morning is if it's the weekend, because I'm gonna
You're
have
done
to
for
nap.
The day.
Yeah. If I eat a
I'm not gonna be productive after eating this.
Exactly, and I will love it. I'll enjoy it, but I'm gonna need a nap when I'm done with it.
And if you've been watching now, Better Call Saul, there's only two episodes left. A lot of Cinnabon talk in Better Call Saul.
Do you heat yours up?
I would prefer it heated. Yes, that's what I.
But I often tend to like pastries. Out of the fridge, because they're a little less.
That one I like
sweet.
Heated up. A little butter on top. Like a, even more. Because there's not enough
fritter.
Butter in it.
Oh, apple fritter.
You like a cold fritter?
Fridge. Oh, yeah.
I didn't eat one today, though. I left them for the listeners. And I insisted these people ate them. I said the Cinnabons are free. Register for the prizes, but I'm insisting you take a Cinnabon. And I don't care if you tear it in half with your hands and leave half of it, or take it with a napkin or whatever. Or take it, one of them was, we had two boxes of six and another box of just one. I said, that's your go box. Take that to the office. He's like, all right, man.
You're a hero.
I said, all right. Anyway, we had a great time out there giving away tickets. It was fun. Fun way to start
inside
the Friday.
Inside of a week.
But here's the deal. Weekend's here. And I'm not mailing this in.
No.
We're going to bring it strong today, but I'm working for the weekend right here is what we're doing. We're going full lover boy today. I'm ready. I'm glad it's here, and I'm really glad that Seren will be back next week. And then he sent us a picture today on our text string. He's like, he's giving us stats, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, he took a picture of his laptop in the beach. I said, put that laptop away. He says, no one else was up, man. It's not my fault. I said, okay, Petro. He was sending. He basically gave us the reasoning why Michael A. Taylor didn't get traded. Because he's not that good a center fielder by all the metrics. He won a gold glove, but we all tend to think that Michael A. Taylor is some gold glove center fielder, but the metrics aren't there for
which it. Which I've never quite understood, because if there's a city in this country that should recognize gold glove center field play, it's this city.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the guys who have patrolled center field for the Royals.
Think about the guy who didn't get one that deserved one in Lorenzo Cain.
Amos Otis, Willie Wilson, Brian McCray,
yes.
Lorenzo Cain, and Carlos Beltran.
Pretty good.
Hey, that's Michael an Taylor, amazing run of defensive center fielders.
He wears the gold, Curtis.
Yeah.
Not according to these stats Petro gave us.
Taylor is as good as any of the five names I just mentioned.
No.
But he has the gold glove that I don't think all but... One or two of those?
So just know this. Petro was up early on the beach making sure we knew that one of the reasons Michael A. Taylor didn't get traded was that he's just not maybe not that good at center field. It was a nice night at the park last night. It was fun. It was nostalgic, right?
Cool.
You got Eric Hosmer playing for the Red Sox. And, you know, rough first inning for Chris Bubich. But he settled down again. He's showing us signs of being able to get through and give you six innings.
Yeah.
And Salvi's just Salvi, man. Big hit, then the home run. He's. I think we did this on the.
I've never seen a ball hit to that exact spot before. That was interesting.
Yeah, you watch long enough, you're going to see it.
You're like, what is that? Because the side angle, you can't see that there's yellow on top of that part.
Right.
That it kind of hits on the corner. I'm like, how is that a home run?
They had a weird review the other day.
You put the two views together and you figure it out.
They had that review the other day that the Royals, it was an afternoon game where the ball hit the wall. You never see it hit.
Yeah.
Right down there. And it was about 6 inches from the yellow. Ended up being they took it back. But, yeah, you watch long enough, you're going to see something you've never seen before.
Man, he hits the ball hard.
Yeah. When he hits it, he hits it. But he has hit the ball hard a lot the last couple of years. And I'm going to stick with – I'm choosing this week what to believe. Frank Bohl, the Royals are never going to be good till 27. Or Jeff Passan telling us yesterday that they've got some nice young pieces to start with. And we're going to see a lot of that as we move forward. During the end of this year, because you're going to get Bobby Witt and Pasquantino, and you know, it looks like Prado's going to be around a little bit, and MJ Melendez, you know, hit a home run last night. So they've got a nice start with some of these things, but what we know they need is they need some nice starts, and they got that again last night. And it wasn't very good for Brady Singer last time out, but he had two really good starts in a row. But Brady still battled last time out. He fought. He gave them a chance to win. So I'm going to choose on August 5th to be bullish on the future of the Royals.
And this is something I'll have by the time we talk to David Leske of Inside the Crown, which we will in about 10 minutes. I'll have this number more solidified. But Melendez with home run number 11 last night, working his way towards what I'd like to think will be 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a few weeks ago. I noted where the Royals were in history as far as having two rookies or two first-year players, not just rookies, rookie eligible, two first-year players having 10 home runs. And I think they were one of 8 or 9 teams ever to have two. And I think they would be one of 4 or 5 ever to have two hit 15. They had gotten to that into that group at midseason almost.
Right.
So if those Bobby Witt Jr. already has 15, Melendez is 4 away, mm-hmm. and so you put those two together, and with some of the other things, we've used the term you can squint and see it on this program a lot. You don't have to squint as much to kind of see what this team could be.
So you're coming with me away from Frank Bohl.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Because that was jolting when Frank starts talking 27. I don't even know what's going to be going on in the world in 2027.
What had happened
on the team?
What had just happened? I wonder if Frank was particularly kind of surly that day. What did the Royals
just It was after the trade deadline,
maybe that was it.
And it was just like, you know. But I'll say this. I love Frank, but he can be grumpy.
I haven't noticed that about him.
He can be grumpy.
You must pull that out of him because he's always delightful when
he's
I'm around.
He's a negator sometimes. I get that.
What happens next? The Royals make the playoffs, or the SEC and Big Ten will be at
50
total teams.
Let's hope the Royals make the playoffs. Let's hope the other never happens. How about that? Let's hope that never happens. All right, let's set the show up. We won't go real long here in the first segment because we do have David Leske waiting in the wings to talk to him about the Royals. And we've got Danny Klingscale Unleashed. I've already seen him. He's been in the building.
Yep.
He come in here and he's going to go run an errand?
Yeah, I think he comes in and then he has an appointment that he goes to.
He's
going to
go.
Close by and he'll be back.
He'll be back. That's, of course, brought to you by Easton Roofing. So Danny will be back in the building. We'll unleash him. We're going to go around the country on the two-minute drill. Philadelphia, Houston, Las Vegas, Arizona. Lots of things happening in the sports world around there. We'll do that. And we've got Need to Know for you, brought to you by Jungle Law, of course, in the 5 o'clock hour. And Twin Peaks will bring us Adam Teicher in the 5 o'clock hour. Chiefs don't practice today.
Yep.
You didn't hear any press conference today.
Everyone gets a day off. Except
so
for Adam.
I'm pretty sure Adam, when I saw him last week, he'd been up there, but he was going to get to come home. So I think he came home yesterday. So we'll catch up with Adam here in Kansas City in his normal surroundings. We'll catch up with him later in the 5 o'clock hour, and we'll have the kicker for you as well. So that's what we've got going on today. As I said, it's been a fun week doing all this stuff. We've got these events coming up with our 100-year anniversary, so we've got a lot of things going on with that, making sure we have everything done right for it, all the events in place. And we got videos coming out. We're giving tickets away. And it's been a fun week. And I'm thrilled to be doing this show this week. And thank you guys for helping me out with
Absolutely.
Everything. You know, because it's not something you just walk
heaven.
In and do. And it's some days this week I've kind of just kind of walked in and kind of helped do it. So it's been fun to do that. So we'll have a fun time with that. Did you have nostalgia last night when Eric Hosmer came up? Did you feel something? I was nice. When I hear Mike McCartney announce the name, that gives me nostalgia for Mike here at the building. You know what I mean?
Hearing that voice call that name, same uniform number, and that was cool. The crowd reaction was what I expected, and he kind of stepped back and got to wave the helmet. That's interesting. There've been some guys from that team that have come back and had that applause. Lorenzo Cain was roundly cheered every time he came to the plate when the Brewers were back here a year ago or something like along that line, and but none of those players had quite the impact I think that Eric Hosmer did. I think Cain was maybe more of a fan favorite than Hosmer, and he may have had arguably the same impact. But anyway, he was one of the, you know, Dayton Moore called him the was Operation Flip the Switch started with him, and he kind of was that first moment. Of the rebuilding of that franchise and the building of that world championship team, and to see the fans there, you know, appreciative of what he did, and that it happened, and then the Royals went out and won, and they won largely because the one guy, the last man standing, Salvador Perez, was Salvador Perez again. So it would have been a good night to be at the ballpark for a number of reasons.
Did you see Whit Merrifield got two hits last night for the Blue Jays in the victory?
Did not.
I expect the Blue Jays to win 13 straight games. That's
right.
what worked
yeah,
for Santana,
go on a tear.
Right?
He's, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
He'll be batting 280 in about 2 weeks. He's two for five last night. I think he was 0 for his first two, but then they scored a lot late, so they got things going there. And that's part of this race, right? Because they're up there playing Minnesota. This isn't something the Royals are in right now. They're not really in the race. But Minnesota, Cleveland, and Chicago are all still very close. So Minnesota needs to win those games. And Whit Merrifield going to keep the Twins out of the playoffs? No, I'm just kidding. Do you want Whit Merrifield to do well in Toronto?
I'm not married to his. I don't really have any impact whether he goes is good or bad. Does not really impact me. He's not a.
I remember in like 18, 19, like you would look up and you'd be like, oh, the Brewers are playing a playoff game. Oh, Kane's on the team. Moose on the team. Go guys, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Whit Merrifield's going to get the go guys thing if the Toronto Blue Jays are in the playoffs.
I don't feel that for Whit. I don't feel that for Benintendi. I mean, he wasn't here long enough to have any kind of affinity for him. I felt that way for the Padres when Hosmer went there. And so, yeah, I kind of would like to see those guys do well. But
what about, Curtis, what about Greinke? Because Greinke was here for a while, had great success, but kind of wasn't shy about expressing his desire to not be here anymore.
We're not winning anything. Frank Bohl told me we're not winning.
Did you feel that way when he was a Brewer? I never felt that about that. But did you cheer for him?
Part of it would be, I guess, the team he went to. It would be much harder for me to root for a player I like when they were here if they were playing for a team I didn't really like very much.
Right.
And I'm okay with the Jays. I don't really hate or like them.
I didn't really root for Zach with the Dodgers. I don't root for the Dodgers.
But it wasn't.
And by the time he got to Houston, they'd already cheated, so I don't really want to root for him then either.
But whether I rooted for him was not impacted by the fact that he, you know, he left here. He should have left here.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no commitment.
It wasn't all that pretty. And him leaving helped the Royals win a World Series.
It did.
So that was the beauty of all of that. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. We'll talk more Royals next with David Leske. The program is underway on a Friday.
He's taken Larry King to a Prince concert. He's eaten Dairy Queen while watching a Duke game.
Certainly Duke is Duke.
He's seen the Princess Bride with his friend Earl.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, it's safe to say he's obsessed with the Royals. From inside the crowd, it's David Leske on the program.
Welcome back into the program. Todd Lebo in for Seren Petro. Wrapping it up on this Friday as we work through this. Time to talk some Royals baseball with David Leske, our good friend from Inside the Crown and Royals Review. David, how are you doing? How'd you make it through trade deadline week?
Oh, it's such an exhausting time. Like, and it shouldn't be because all you're doing is refreshing Twitter. but for some reason, it's like, I got a nap. And what are we, 2 days? Two full days passed. Now the third day. I think I feel better. I think I'm good to go.
good deal. Well, let's start there. Okay, how'd the Royals do? A, B, C, D, and we'll take it back the way JJ Piccolo wanted to. Let's include all the transactional things starting with Carlos Santana. How did they do in getting rid of players that didn't look like they'd be part of the future of this team?
So I think that I looked at it two ways. The players they got back, the deals they actually made, I was fine with. I don't think they were great, but I thought they were good. And I think some of the deals that happened, like the deal after the Benintendi trade, the Peralta deal that brought back rookie league catcher, made the Benintendi deal look better to me. Because Peralta and Benintendi, pretty similar value, similar players, both free agents at the end of the season, all that, kind of made it look better for them. So I think what they got back for who they traded, I think B-ish. Solid, not like I said, great, but not bad. You felt like they could have done more. I heard what Jeff Passan said yesterday, talking about Scott Barlow's velocity and arbitration numbers. And I get it. I don't know. I'm not saying he's wrong. I think he's obviously right. He's plugged in, he knows. But I still think the Royals could have gotten something for Barlow that I think may have been more useful toward a contending Royals team than Scott Barlow will be, because he'll be gone. They probably should have moved Michael A. Taylor. I mean, he's not having he's having a much better offensive season than last year, but a much worse defensive season than last year. So you know, what do you believe? If you think one's a fluke, you could theoretically think the other is a fluke, and you could go back to being a defense first guy. I think there was probably a market for him. And, you know, I don't know that they necessarily would have gotten a lot for Brad Keller, and I sort of understand hanging on to him given what they have for next season. But it felt like they could have at least made one more move that I think maybe could have helped, you know, bring in a couple extra prospects that just fit into the mix. But ultimately, I mean, if you look at the MLB pipeline prospect list, which not the be-all end-all, but they obviously know what they're doing, they added six top 30 prospects. That's solid for a farm system that's kind of starting to become empty now that everybody's up in the big leagues. And there are two reasons you're okay with an empty farm system. One is that all of your top prospects are up and they're in their first 2 years, which is what the Royals are dealing with right now. And two, that you traded guys to win. So the Royals are one of those two, and that's okay. But they added six guys, and I think that's a good haul.
So when you say they could have done more, you don't mean quantity that they got in return, but number of moves they made, right?
Yeah, I think they could have. I mean, like I said, I'm not saying they should have absolutely, without a doubt, should have traded Taylor Keller and Scott Barlow and Josh Domon and Taylor, you know. But I think they could have made a move or two more. It probably would have brought back less than they were hoping for. And, you know, I kind of get it to that extent because they don't have to trade those guys. They're not free agents at the end of the season. But I still think there would have been value in return. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they were offered just absolutely nothing. Like, for example, if the Royals were offered for Scott Barlow what the Orioles got for Jorge Lopez, I would have hated that trade if they made it. Mm-hmm. So I'd be okay with that move not happening. And so it's hard to say for sure. I just feel like there probably was at least one more move they could have made.
Yeah, the difficulty in judging the trade deadline, particularly for a team that doesn't make as many moves as you would expect, you can judge what the offers were for a guy who leaves, but you really can't judge the offers for a guy who didn't leave. So we're left to kind of speculate what might have been, and we'll never know what the best offers were for Barlow or Taylor or for Keller, and we won't know if the Royals were active in trying to make trades with people or if they were passive and just made trade deals that came to them. But when you're looking at a team, as you said, of an organization that's kind of dry now in the minor leagues, lottery tickets is something of value. And I do kind of have a hard time. I'm kind of with you. I have a hard time believing that they couldn't have worked something out for something of value for at least one of those three guys.
Or maybe gotten a better piece back if you, let's say, include Barlow with Benintendi or Merrifield or whatever.
Right.
I think that they could have at least improved the return at the very least, but, you know, they didn't, and so here we are.
David Leske talking Royals with us here on the program. All right, David, on Michael A. Taylor, Surin sent us some numbers from Vacation from the Beach this morning about outs above average. Taylor is not good. He's not among the best, so I think he's maybe a little overvalued, his point was, by the Royals defensively, and so they might have been asking for too much. I get that. You know, everyone wants the world for whatever they have. But in the end, Michael A. Taylor has 1 year left with the Royals. He's making $4.5 million next year. Is he someone they kind of need someone to play center field, right? There's not someone pushing him out to play in center field in the minor leagues right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can make an argument that Kyle Isbell should be out there every day, seeing what he can do. Defensively, he's looked pretty good. Problem is, he's been like a zero offensively. He's just taken steps back in a number of ways. And the other side of that, and I don't think this is a big deal if you've got the right pieces, but they're pretty left-leaning. And adding another left-handed bat to the everyday lineup, it can make for some tough situations. I mean, you saw the White Sox did on, I think it was Wednesday, when they had 6-9 and then Melendez at the top, all left-handed. They brought in Jake Diekman, and he rolled through these lefties. And you run into that situation when you can't really balance your lineup too much. And so I kind of get that to some extent. I don't know. I also think you could say, look, if you're going to play Nate Eaton every day, and I don't know if they are, he played last night, he can play center field.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a right-handed bat. So do you really necessarily need a center fielder right now? I don't. I mean, you need a guy to play there, obviously. But I mean, Eaton can handle it. I think, as well as Taylor's play this year. And it's interesting because his numbers are not great this year, but they were phenomenal last season. I mean, he won the Gold Glove and deserved it last year. This year he probably won't win the Gold Glove, and that's good because he doesn't deserve to win it. But the other thing, too, with trading Michael A. Taylor, he only makes $4.5 million next year. And if you look at the free agent center fielders on the market, it is ugly. If a team needs a center fielder, there's probably a trade to be made in November or December. So there's still a chance.
Right.
But, you know, again, we'll have to see and wait and find out.
Yeah, there's no rule against trading someone in the offseason. That can happen as well. Let's talk a little bit about Keller. I think he's interesting. He's leading the league in losses right now, right? But he's they like him. He has been available this year. He's going out there and taking the ball and pitching. He's got a year left before he's a free agent. I don't think he's got a lot of trade value. Is this someone who should be considered part of their future still? And if that's the case, do you commit a 2-year contract to him or a 3-year contract? I mean, I'm not saying he deserves any more than that, but is there some value to buying a year of his free agency to make him feel like he belongs, or to maybe make him a more tradable piece later? Because if they get him for fairly cheap,
yeah, that's a good question. Because it's hard to say for certain. You know, he's a guy who, when he's good, he's pretty good. I mean, he can give you 6-7 innings. He generally will keep you in a game. He doesn't. His walks are not huge. You know, they've dropped off a little bit this season to a little bit more usable point, I guess. I don't know exactly what to do with him because it's just such a such a bizarre pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Seren calls it the Keller coaster, and it's accurate because he's good one game, terrible the next, great one game, terrible the next, average. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. The real question with Keller, I don't think what he does matters. I think it's about the other guys on the staff. And so you look ahead, and if the Royals do this calculation, they say, who do we have for 2023 and let's say 2024? Okay, Brady Singer, you feel good about that. I think you feel good about him in the rotation. I don't know where he slots, but you feel good about him as a big league starter.
Right.
That's fair. Chris Bubich. I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, it's one of those things that I feel like I should know the answer to that question, but I don't think we do. He's been really, really solid since he came back from AAA.
Mm-hmm.
But is that enough to say he should be in the rotation starting next season? I don't know. Daniel Lynch. He had a nice start the other day. He was very solid. He hasn't been consistent either. There's been stretches where he's been really good, and then stretches where he just simply hasn't. So where does that fit in? Then there's Jonathan Heasley and Carlos Hernandez and all these different pieces. And there are just so many questions for rotation that I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to give Keller a 2-year deal. The problem with that, from all I've heard, he hasn't been interested in signing an extension. Now, a lot of that came after 2020 when he was great. He had
right.
a great season. He was limiting hard contact, you know, just doing everything well, I feel like, as a pitcher, except for striking guys out. And so maybe he's changed that tune a little bit, but he hasn't been willing to this point because the Royals have wanted to, from what I understand, and he just hasn't wanted to do it yet. So I don't know that he'd forego free agency for a price that makes sense. so that's where the question with Keller comes in. And then you have to look at, like I said, you have to look and see what you have, and then you go to the free agent market and see what's there, and it's kind of a rough free agent market. I mean, I was looking at it. Chris Bassett is probably the best pitcher that they could potentially afford, I think, free agent market. Then you got a bunch of question marks. Clevinger, Eovaldi, Corey Kluber, Stripling, Noah Syndergaard, Jameson Taillon. Bunch of guys who, I don't know. I don't know if you want to commit the money to them. So maybe Keller is the guy. It's hard to say.
And there's no piece you could use. I mean, the James Shields type move. You don't have the funds in as far as player availability. You know, young players, you don't have that kind of depth in your minor league system or anywhere else to even pull off a move like that.
You sort of do, but now you're taking it from the big league team because they're all up. And so, you know, if you say, okay, we're willing to deal Nick Prado and I don't know, doesn't matter who, John Heasley, I don't know if he's the guy who's going to get done, but whatever, and say, hey, we're going to go to the Marlins and see what Pablo Lopez can bring. Well, okay, you know, there's risk with Pablo Lopez. His career high in innings is 118 and two-thirds, and he's got that this year. Can you count on him to be the guy? The stuff is there. You know, maybe the Diamondbacks finally say we're going to trade Zach Gallen, or the Rockies, who this is stupid to even say because they won't move on from any other players, but Herman Marquez. You know, you can get that guy maybe, but you're trading from your big league roster now. So, or unless you dip into what little is left, and I guess it's, you know, you're not trading Drew Waters after you traded for him. Is it Nick Lofton? He's not a centerpiece of the deal. So, I mean, you're coming from your big league roster, and then you create another hole potentially. So it's a tough outlook there.
Yeah,
and the Royals made that move after a 90-loss season. I mean, he was good. They were good the minute he got here, the first year he got here. But they were coming off that 90-loss season, and they don't have Mike Montgomery, Will Myers, and Jake Odorizzi
to package. Not minor leaguers. I mean,
not yeah. Or at any point.
Bobby Witt, you know, doing that. What about this Max Castillo, one of the guys who came back with the Blue Jays? He's been a starting pitcher in the minors, but he's relieved a little bit. He's still young. This guy's 23, right? Is this someone who could be in the rotation for the Royals next year?
Yeah, he could be. And I've already, you know, he's so new that I forgot about him. But he's a guy, I don't know that he's a starter long term. I think the fastball is good enough. The changeup is really good. It's about the slider to me, or something else that he could develop, which I wouldn't trust that in the Royals organization based on the history. But he's got a slider. It's pretty good at times. When it's good, it's good. And so that, look, you want to start. It's a lot easier to make a pitch become a plus pitch if it's already a plus pitch at times than if it's never a plus pitch. So they've got that going for them with him. And if he can throw that slider, then he's probably a potential 4 or 5 starter, which there's value in that, especially when they're before they hit arbitration. So he could be that guy too. And maybe that goes into the evaluation with Keller. Luke Weaver also could go into that. When they traded for him, I thought, oh, they're moving Keller. That was my first thought, is they got Luke Weaver, who has the same contract status as Brad Keller, 1 year left before free agency. They got him because they are moving Brad Keller. And then he was on the mound 3 hours later. No, I guess it was the next day.
Yeah.
And they didn't move him. But that was my first thought, was Weaver was the Keller replacement. So that's possible too. And like Keller could move in the offseason because, I mean, I listed the free agents there, some of the best ones. There are, I don't know, 30 teams will be signing starting pitching free agents, but there are a minimum of 26 teams who need starting pitching. Somebody's going to miss out and say, well, I need a guy who can give me 180 innings, which Keller has never done, but theoretically he could. So maybe there's a move there, and they go with one of the young guys.
Yeah.
There may be an answer to this question that's easy and I'm just missing, but why is he still down? Why is Max Castillo not in the Royals dugout or clubhouse today?
Yeah, so my first thought, I was wrong about this. I thought because the Blue Jays had just optioned him that he couldn't come back until 15 days. Because I think he got optioned on the 29th, maybe. Turns out I was wrong about that. So I had an answer, and now I don't know. Because I thought that was why he wasn't up. But, I mean, I guess some of it is he's got options, and who else in the Royals bullpen does? It's Wyatt Mills. I wouldn't necessarily put Wyatt Mills over a guy you just traded who you like. But he's I think, the only guy who has options. I'm looking right now. I mean, it's Coleman, Taylor Clark, you're not sending down. Stalmont, you're not sending down. Barlow, you're not sending down. So it's Wyatt Mills or Luke Weaver. Now, you could argue, well, who cares about Piamps?
Right.
So, that you have him until you get somebody who you can replace him with, and they did. So I don't know, but
I expect he'll probably be up here at some point this year,
yeah,
right?
It just seems weird when you look at a guy who's in the majors with a 3.05 ERA and a WHIP of 0.968 with a 20-5 strikeout to walk ratio is employed by your organization, and he's not in the major leagues.
Yeah, it's and look, I mean, if you want to work with him, maybe they wanted to get a look at him outside of the majors. I don't know why.
Cure him of that strike throwing habit.
Yeah, well, look, they don't tolerate guys who don't walk batters. Okay,
if we get that around to
walk, they want their pitchers to
walk
guys.
Yeah.
it's just too much. I don't have a good answer for you. I thought I did until I realized that I was wrong about it.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to know that you're as puzzled by as I am. That's really all I wanted to know is that as crazy to you as it is to me? Yes, it is.
Let's rewind like 4 months and people always talk about. Well, you know, we always talk about the guys who were drafted in 2018, but how about this Carlos Hernandez? You know, he's going to be the one. And then he's just atrocious early. He's a little bit hurt. Have you given up on him as a piece at this point?
I wouldn't say I've given up on him. I think that he's put himself behind in the pecking order, at least, because Singer's emerged. Bubich has, like we said, been much better. Lynch has shown enough that you're not – You feel like you can get something out of him. You feel like he's not that far from being good. And then at some point, you can't just run with that kind of rotation. I feel like you need some sure thing, I guess. So I don't think he's done necessarily. I mean, he was up pitching the Blue Jays series. His velocity was back, which was really nice. He had a nice start. The other day and for Omaha, maybe it was the start before last. So there's still the talent is still there, and I think that if you look at his repertoire, his velocity, his swing and miss, all that stuff, it you can match it up with anybody in the organization. But like I said, he's behind a lot of guys, including Jonathan Heasley, who just got sent down. He pitched okay yesterday for Omaha. I think Angel Zerpa passed him. Unfortunate for him that he's now out for probably the year. I think I don't know if they said that or not.
They did 60-day, I think, on him.
Yeah,
so.
60-day puts you. I mean, maybe one start in the big leagues. He's kind of lost his spot and he's got to regain it. The problem is he hasn't really done it yet, so it's hard to say that he can be a part of the future.
Yeah, David Leske is our guest here now. Yesterday, I was encouraged by Jeff Passan telling us that. The Royals, there are worse ways to start with your, I'm not going to say rebuild or anything because they've been rebuilding for years, but there's some good young hitters on this team, right? MJ Melendez looks like a major league hitter at times. Bobby Witt has a bright future. Vinny Pasquantino's up. He's going to take his knocks this year. I'm excited to watch Michael Massey play a lot as we work through this. You mentioned Nick Eaton is up here now. I mean, I guess this is... We're going to watch some young hitters that we saw all accidentally. Well, not all of them. Some of them in Toronto. And then now we're going to see them a lot here now because the trades have been made. I mean, just how important is it for these guys to get this experience going down the stretch here?
It's huge. I mean, we saw Bobby Witt Jr. struggle. We've seen Vinny Pasquantino. It's hard to say he struggled because he's made such good contact and had great plate appearances. Just the results haven't been there. We saw MJ Melendez go through a rough patch. He seems to be maybe coming out on the other side of that right now. Nick Prado is going through it. These guys who the jump from AAA to the big leagues, you hear it all the time now. It's never been bigger. And so the season doesn't matter anymore. The wins and losses don't matter. They're fun to cheer for when they win. The losses don't mean anything, really, honestly. It's you hate to be in that position, but it's the reality of the situation. And so this is their chance. They've got, 56 games, I think, left.
Mm-hmm.
They have a chance to get their feet wet in the big leagues. And, you know, for Prado and Massey specifically, and I guess Nate Eaton as well, because they hadn't been up much before, they have an opportunity to kind of get the cobwebs knocked off from the jump from AAA to the big leagues. It's a tough jump. So that's really big for them. And just right. This is it's The Royals are in a really nice position on the position player side because they've got a lot. I mean, they really do. And I've said this before. I trust their development in the minors for hitters. I think that you look in the minors, and while the rankings aren't there, Tyler Gentry, I think, is going to be a good player. And he might get a chance to start in the big league next season. Drew Waters has been fantastic since the Royals traded for him. There's still some strikeout issues there, but they're working through that. I think Michael Garcia has shown a decent amount that if you think Bobby Witt's your third baseman now instead of your shortstop, maybe Garcia's the shortstop moving forward. And not a lot of power, but he provides something different than some of these other guys, which it's weird to think about the Royals having a bunch of power prospects, but they do. And then you've also got Salvador Perez at the big league level for three more years under contract. I don't think he's leaving after that either. So it's they're in a good spot, and it'll be good to get them. I want to make sure if I'm the Royals, I'm looking at this team. Every one of these young guys has to start. I don't know if it's 50 games or 47 games, but the vast majority of the remaining games to get them, plate appearances that are kind of bonus plate appearances.
All right, David, before we get to our final four, how are you going to remember Whit Merrifield in his career as a Royal?
It's so interesting because you think of him as, one of the best players on the team, but then you look back and he was one of the best players on really bad teams. So what does that mean? And, the question comes up, is he a Royals Hall of Famer? And then you start to look at it, you go, he kind of compares with Joe Randa, who was a really nice player. I don't think he's a Royals Hall of Famer. So, as far as on the field, though, I think that what you have to look at him as a guy who, he was out there every day until he wasn't, and then kind of really a stabilizing force in some bad times. And as a player, I'll remember him fondly as a Royal because he gave the Royals didn't have a ton of highlights over the last seasons. I mean, yes, Hilaire and Salvi hitting home runs, and that was great. But Whit Merrifield chasing the hit title and the stolen base title, that was about as much fun as Royals fans had outside of the home run barrages from the other two. And Whit Merrifield was at the front of those.
Yeah. It's a shame that it got weird at the end, but it is what it is. It is what it is. All right, David Leske.
Ruined a good date.
Yeah.
It was a little awkward at the end.
David Leske from Inside the Crown is our guest. Time for our final four brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Let's start it off. I'll put you on the spot. What's your favorite Royals trade deadline-ish trade in history?
Oh, boy. In history. So this is – I don't know if this is my favorite, but I remember this – I feel like more than most people, but Rondell in 2003. I mean, that was just such a stupid season. and they had gotten, it was Graham Lloyd and Curtis Luskanic at the actual deadline. And then they got Rondell White. If it wasn't right at the August 31st deadline, that doesn't even exist anymore. It was right before it. And he absolutely raked for a month. It was one of the best months you'll see from a Royals hitter ever. Didn't work, but I remember seeing that trade and I was like, oh, Rondell White, I saw him with the Expos. I liked him. And then just he went off and it was great.
That's why we have you on, because I had forgotten the Rondell White era with the Royals.
Well, he's a Royals Hall of Famer for sure.
Absolutely a Royals Hall of Famer. There you go. Let's see. Did 22 games.
How about that?
Yeah, got after it pretty good. Got that 347. Right on at four bombs. Wasn't enough, though. Wasn't enough. They were done there. All right, number two. Let's put your flag in the ground right here. Who's your opening day starter next year for the Royals?
Gotta be Brady Singer, right? I mean, at this point, he's kind of taken that and run with it. Unless they go out and they get Chris Bassett or do something crazy. And maybe there's a trade I'm not seeing, and he's the guy. But I think it's Brady Singer.
Yeah. All right, where's Adalberto Mondesi? Is he playing again for the Royals? Is he going to be our spring training story again next year?
Ah, gosh. The answer to that question is not about Mondesi. It's about who's in charge of the organization. Because if they don't make moves in the front office, I think Mondesi's probably back, considering the fact that it seems like they might be thinking that Bobby Witt moving back to third.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my head is. But I feel like if you make some moves in the front office and it's no longer Dayton Moore, which I don't know, could be, I don't know that Modesty comes back. But I'm gonna say he is back. Not gonna make a ton of money, so it's maybe worth the risk. And I think the whole story is gonna be look how he's moving, look at his knee, everything's great, and he's gonna be an MVP this season, and you know, it's lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. So you mentioned it there. If everything's back in the front office, are you getting some feelings that they won't all be back? There could be some changes that we haven't really had around here in a while.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I don't know about probable, but I think it's possible. I think there could be some moves. I would not be surprised. I keep coming back to the fact that they did not extend Mike Matheny before the season. They just picked up his option, so he wasn't a lame duck. Which, look, they could do something again before next season, but I think there's going to be some moves. And one name, I don't know that has been mentioned too much. I would not be surprised if the manager next year is Alex Dumwalt, if it's not Mike Matheny. So Let's just keep that in the back.
Write that one down. We're going to write that one down right there.
Friday, August 5th,
there
2:53 p.m.
Leske called. Hey, David, thanks so much for your time today. Enjoy the weekend, all right?
All right, you too, guys. Thanks.
All right, that's David Leske joining us here on the program on a Friday. Ska Fridays, is that what we're doing? We're back on Ska Fridays here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Todd Lebo in for Seren Petro on the program. Courtesy Bold is here. Ethan, the intern, is here. Thanks for getting me lunch and then paying for it. I don't know how you did that, but whatever. I gave the kid money, and he bought it on the app. I gave him real money. That's no good. Real money don't work on them apps. It's terrible.
Your money doesn't jiggle, jiggle. It folds.
We're in the middle of Ska Friday. So that means
it's a big day. The inaugural Ska Friday.
So we're gonna get Ska and Danny's second segment and the third segment. So that we'll
if we have a bumper that does not already have a guest intro,
right,
you're getting Ska.
Yeah. What we need to do is for the Friday intros, Curtis, you need to go redo those with Ska music in them.
That will not happen.
What? Come on, Curtis.
Hey, he gets to control the bumpers.
Hey, by the way,
I have the only part of this show I have editorial control over is the open.
I got to change the channel in here because Danny's coming in.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. And he's recording the Arsenal game.
Oh, Arsenal.
So I need to change this channel in here because Danny insists on not looking at it. I told him I've never seen anyone. I couldn't believe Crystal Palace scored 6 in the first half. He didn't believe me. So we're keeping that a secret. Maybe we'll just have him not look back over his shoulder and won't be able to look at the TV. I don't know. It's a game we play. Mess with Danny. He's actually VCRing this, I'm sure.
Lineup is out.
Who's in it?
Melendez, Massey, Perez.
Massey up to two, huh?
Yep, batting, playing second. Pasquantino, Dozier, Prado, Eaton, Isbell, Lopez, Greinke on the mound.
Greinke. There you go. That'll be fun. Royals and Red Sox tonight out there. Michael Massey up to the two hole. I've talked to people. They like that kid. They think he can really hit. He'll be the new wit for the Royals. Danny Klingscale up next.
All right, born on this date, the last first-round pick of the Kansas City Kings. Who is he? Brought to you by Good Sense.